came to America when he was 6 months old. He started as a stock boy at the grocery store. Eventually, he owned it. He turned it into the biggest grocery store chain in New York City. He now owns a real estate company worth over $2 billion. He ran for mayor of New York City. He almost won. You can't make this story up. This is the Katz Roundtable with John Catsimatidis.
Everywhere around the world, they come to America.
Good morning, America. This is the Katz Roundtable. John Catsimatidis here, Sunday morning. Powerful show today. We have Bill O'Reilly. He's been in Europe. He's giving us an update. What's going on there? Our correspondent in Europe, Mario Economo. He's got his own version of what he thinks is going on. Senator Marsha Blackburn, Senator Ron Johnson. And let's start off the show with Admiral James Stavridis, Supreme Allied Commander of NATO for 4 years. And let's see what he has to say. With us today is Admiral James Stavridis, and he was a retired four-star officer in the Navy and Supreme Allied Commander of NATO, and one knowledgeable person. There's nobody more knowledgeable that I could depend on than Admiral Stavridis. Admiral, you served mostly in Europe running NATO, so let's go to Europe first. Ukraine and Russia. Nobody really knows what's going on. Ukraine wants more money. You give us an update.
Let's start with the fundamental fact here, which is Vladimir Putin invaded Ukraine. He's carved out about 15% of that country. He would like to overrun the entire country, and he will not stop, assuming he is given the opportunity to conquer Ukraine. We ought to stop him in Ukraine before he threatens other nations, including NATO allies in Western Europe. Everything I just said is a fact. The question is, where are we today? And we were at a stalemate until U.S. aid started to run out. And as a result of that, the Russians are now starting to inch forward. And that's not going to get better unless the U.S. provides this $60 billion additional amount of aid. Now, John, I know that sounds like a lot of money, but in the context of the U.S. defense budget, which is about $900 billion, $60 billion is not a huge amount. And secondly, before you ask me, well, what about those Europeans? The Europeans have already provided well over $60 billion. So this is the United States effectively matching the European contribution, and it's in our interest to do it. If we don't do it, Putin has a reasonable shot at taking more territory. He'll gain all the resources that come with conquering a country like Ukraine. He'll use those resources, and he'll keep rolling to the east. What is this like, John? It's like the 1930s, watching a malevolent Hitler's Germany push across Europe. We need to stop him now.
It seems like that. We're living in the 1937 all over again, and it's horrible. It's
So what we need is good leadership. And I'm encouraged by press reports that Speaker of the House Johnson wants to get this aid in front of the House. If it gets in front of the House, it'll pass by at least 2/3 of the House members. It's already passed the Congress. And, oh, by the way, we can then start allocating money reasonably to our border security, equally important, as well as money for Taiwan to deter China. So, yeah, it's a big, complicated world out there. But the answer is not for us to curl up into a fetal ball back home in the United States and drift into some kind of isolationism. We have to continue to engage the world, because the world economy is what fuels our own economy. Those are the lessons of the 1930s.
Agreed. It seems like the price of gasoline, oil is going up. The price of food is going up. It comes down to the Red Sea and the Suez Canal. And I know we're very capable of wiping out all those Houthis, but it doesn't seem like we did it. We have done it.
I agree. I think we have been too timid in our approach in striking back at the Houthis. They are proxies. They are creatures of Iran. We're trying to be very calibrated in our approach, and it's not working. They're continuing to shoot at our warships. They're shooting at merchant traffic. And sooner or later, one of those ballistic missiles is going to get through, and you're going to see dozens of American sailors killed or a big merchant ship sunk with an environmental disaster or blocking the Suez Canal approaches. So my view, John, we need to increase the offensive work we're doing against the Houthis themselves, and we are probably going to have to start thinking about going after Iranian maritime targets to send them a signal to stop supplying these Houthi rebels. So, yes, I agree. We have been too timid thus far in our approach against these pirates, and that's what they are. Every nation has an interest in seeing this stop.
Agreed. Now, on Friday afternoon, Kuwait and Qatar told the U.S. that if there's a problem with Iran, they cannot use their airspace. Is that usual?
I've seen reports of that, and I think it's too soon to determine whether that would be standing policy or not. Particularly, Qatar has reasonable relations with Iran. I think it would all depend, John, on what the Iranians do that caused the United States to come into the war. I, for one, don't think we're going to get to that point. I don't think the Iranians are looking for a conflict with the United States. So I don't think their strike that could be happening at any time, may have already happened by the time this broadcast is made. That strike, I do not think, is going to be huge. I don't think it'll be thousands of missiles launched at Tel Aviv. I think the Iranians will try to stay precise and surgical, much like the Israeli strike that was conducted against their consulate in Damascus. They'll try and stay proportional, not because they're good guys, but because they don't want to see the United States come into this war. And in terms of our other allies, partners in the region, Qatar, UAE, Kuwait, Oman, each of them will make individual decisions about airspace access. The one I would worry about the most would be Qatar, because in Qatar, we have our largest airbase in the entire region, outside of the capital of Doha, a base called Al Udeid. That'll be quite critical for the United States to be able to fly in and out of there.
Understood. We have about 30 seconds left, or 40 seconds. I mean, anything you want to get off your chest on a Sunday morning?
I want to say something cautiously optimistic, which is we're very worried about the Middle East. We're very worried about the war in Ukraine. On a kind of a sidebar, but a very important thing, is U.S.-China relations. And if you think about it, those have been pretty calm for the last 6 months or so. We've got an inauguration coming up in Taiwan on 20 May. Let's hope China maintains a path of not wanting to crack open big conflict in the Pacific, and I don't think they will. So bottom line, John, on this Sunday morning, we ought to be hopeful and, I think, cautiously optimistic about U.S.-China relations.
Well, God bless America. I agree with you, and And let's pray for peace, and we'll catch up again real soon. Thank you, Admiral.
Caristo Patriori. Thank you, my friend.
Thank you. Thank you for listening to the Cats Roundtable. We'll be right back right after this break. Welcome back to the Cats Roundtable. With us today is Bill O'Reilly, a journalist, a best-selling author, and he's been in Europe all week. Bill O'Reilly, what pulse did you get of things going on?
Well, I went to Malta, the island nation south of Sicily, north of Libya. And since I've been to all the Greek islands except the one that you were born on, I went there because I'm a historian, and that Malta is unbelievable history, all the way back to the Phoenicians, to the Nazis. I mean, it's incredible. The island is a nation. It is the smallest country in the EU, European Union. And it is very interesting how they govern. On the one hand, it's very liberal. Pot is legalized. People kind of do what they want. On the other hand, they don't tolerate situations that would hurt the 500,000 people that live on Malta. For example, every European country, John, has a problem with migrants coming from the Middle East and Africa, sailing across the Mediterranean, and then they're released into the EU. Does that sound familiar to anybody here in the United States?
100%.
There's only one country that doesn't have that problem, and that's Malta. And you would think that it would, because that's the closest country to North Africa. But what they do, the government does, is if you show up in Malta without a valid passport, they put you immediately into detention for 8 months. Your case isn't even heard for 8 months. And then when your case is heard, it takes about 15 minutes for you to be deported. So the smugglers of the migrants don't even bother, and they don't have any problem at all. The boats go right past Malta to Italy, where there is an enormous problem with migration. So that's one thing I learned. I did talk to the Minister of Defense at his request in Malta. I asked him about, I said, what do people think about Biden? Nobody cares about Joe Biden in Malta. He has the lowest possible profile. I said, what about Trump? Divided. They like Trump's foreign policy because there were no wars in those 4 years. But they don't like Trump's climate change stance. So anyway, it was I'm back. It was a great trip. Learned a lot. And when I travel, that's what I want to do.
Oh, Bill O'Reilly, that was the reason England or the United Kingdom did Brexit, because they were tired of being invaded, and the British population went from 67% British down to something like 47, and they panicked. And Germany and France has devastated their countries with immigration. And I understand Switzerland this week or last week put their foot down. They're going to ban migrants coming in.
All the way up to Sweden, where the population now is 10% foreign-born, and Sweden is a historically homogenous country, every government is under siege. But, you know, the Maltese is pretty simple. You can't come here without a reason and a legal basis to come here, and there's no problem there. So, you know, if you're going to play around with it, you're going to get hurt. And certainly in the United States, in the open border Biden administration, that has devastated our country.
What happened in the last week or so? President Trump is going to be forced to sit in court for weeks and weeks and weeks because they're forcing him to sit there in New York City. And he can't go out and campaign. I mean, that doesn't sound to me that's fair and square.
I think everybody who's fair-minded knows that this is a political prosecution by Alvin Bragg, the district attorney in Manhattan. I don't think there's any two sides to that story. The basis of the case is extortion. So a woman, 4 days before the 2016 election,
contacted the Trump Organization and said, if you don't pay me money, I'm going to say that Donald Trump had an affair with me. That was Stormy Daniels. Have you ever heard, John, in your life, a criminal prosecution based upon extortion? Have you? I mean, I haven't.
I can't believe
still. That's what the basis of this whole thing is. And
I can't.
It's clear that the state of New York wants to destroy, and I use that word literally, Donald Trump and his organization. That's what the state of New York is using its power to do.
It all started, Bill O'Reilly, when Donald Trump gave his state, his incoming state speech, whatever it's called, and handed it to Nancy Pelosi, and she tore it in half. I mean, my God, how can anybody do that? And then Nancy Pelosi brings in these people with no credibility to go after Trump, to go after Justice.
I'm not sure where what case
him.
You're referring to.
Yes, when they testified when our last justice for the Supreme Court was being interviewed.
The genesis of all this is the progressive movement hates Donald Trump because Trump appointed conservative justices to the Supreme Court. And you remember our Senator Charles Schumer standing outside the house of Brett Kavanaugh saying after the Roe v. Wade decision, you guys are going to be sorry, actually threatening the Supreme Court. So, look, I think, again, let's go back to fair-minded people. Everybody knows the political process is out of control in America right now. And I don't, again, I use those words literally. It's out of control. And it has to play out if Trump gets convicted of whatever Bragg is charging him with, some kind of manipulation of funds to pay off Stormy Daniels. It's going to go into up to the Supreme Court. So will his real estate thing that was engineered by our Attorney General, Letitia James. That'll all wind up in the Supreme Court, but in the meantime, it affects the presidential campaign. However, I think it helps Trump at this point more than hurts him.
Bill O'Reilly, did you know that O.J. was that sick that he passed away this week?
No, I don't follow him. I did cover the trial. He was guilty, in my humble opinion. I believe the man is a sociopath. His conduct throughout his life has been bizarre, to say the least. He lost control of himself. The case was depressing in the sense that Americans took sides based on race, skin color. And he was acquitted. You know, when I heard the acquittal, again, I was I covered the case for Inside Edition. I wasn't that surprised because the African-American community was basically saying to the justice system, well, you're corrupt. You hate us, and we're not going to let you, whether he did it or not, convict O.J. Simpson. And I could understand, you know, because a guy like Mark Furman, an L.A., ex-L.A. police officer, was racist, there's no doubt. And that department historically has had a lot of trouble with African-Americans. I understand why blacks might hate the LAPD. But you don't let a murderer walk out the door, and they did.
What else would you like to get off your shoulders, your chest?
Well, I'm ramping up my election coverage now on BillO'Reilly.com, on WABCRadio.com with Common Sense at 9 p.m. Monday through Friday. And we're really kicking it to high gear. And on Monday, I'm putting forth the three greatest blunders made by presidents of the United States, the top three mistakes. We're going to name the president.
That'll be interesting.
Yep.
Bill O'Reilly, have a great weekend, and I always enjoy talking to you, and let's have more good times together. Thank you so much.
All right, John. Thanks for having me in.
The Cats Roundtable.
With us today is Mario Economo, our foreign correspondent in Europe, and he's worked for large money center banks in New York, London, Zurich, and has a pulse of the economy of Europe and what the heck is going on. And Mario, give us an update. What's going on in Europe? We haven't talked to you in a few weeks.
Yes, good morning. So let's start off where we left off last time. There was a vote in the European at the European Commission and to decide whether or not they were going to actually seize the income off of sanctioned Russian assets, and it looked like the vote was going to be a no, but in the end it actually is a yes. So they're going to go ahead and proceed to seize the income off of those assets, and they're hoping for a disbursement of those of that income by the beginning
of June.
How much
is it, DeMario?
Well, the income, I'm not sure what the income is, but the assets are roughly $300 billion. Of course, this has had a tremendous impact on the price of gold, which we've seen through in the last several weeks skyrocket in its price. And we know that the Russians and the Chinese hold a lot of gold, so we've actually helped them in much the way the Russians had said we would,
Mario,
in increasing their reserves.
Isn't that dumb to have an additional conflict of $300 billion with Russia?
It's not smart. It's definitely not smart. But you're speaking to someone who doesn't believe anything's been done correctly from the outset of this. This should have been settled 3 months into it. It hasn't been, and it looks like it's not going to be for some time now. But let's move on, and let's just talk about a couple of things that I find very interesting. In certain polls that have been done in Europe, we've seen that, for the most part, Europeans are happy to continue to support the Ukraine. However, when you tell the Europeans that the Americans, if President Trump gets reelected, will no longer provide support, that interest in continuing to support the Ukraine from European resources drops down to 20%. So we can see that the Europeans are happy for the war to continue as long as the Americans continue to fund it and to provide the equipment and the arms to the Ukrainians.
Mario, one more question. There's been many, many rumors that a lot of the money, a lot of the equipment that's been going to the Ukraine has been misused. What do you hear from your sources?
I'm not sure what you mean by misused, but the people who have received this equipment, the troops, they haven't been adequately trained on it. And for example, those M1 Abrams tanks that were sent, many of the sensitive components on them were removed because America was concerned that the Russians may get a hold of these tanks and then therefore re-engineer them or try to figure out exactly what the actual security deficiencies on them are. So they've actually provided, in my opinion, substandard equipment to the Ukrainians, essentially tying one hand behind their back. But it doesn't matter. This is all nickels and dimes at the end of the day. This war was lost. When I spoke to you in November, I said the war is over. It was over. You have to understand, when the Germans fought the Battle of Stalingrad, and that ended almost 2 years before the end of the war, it was pretty much over for the Germans after that battle. The losses they took, the hit they took, was so severe they never recovered from it. So we see a situation in the Ukraine now where this can actually continue for a while longer. Much is going to depend, like I said, on whether or not President Trump gets reelected. The Europeans, for their part, are saying that they will continue to support. But the reality is they don't have the resources in Europe to provide more support. And sending troops is a non-starter because if you look at the geographic distribution of the countries and their polls, the majority of the countries in Europe are all saying, the people in the countries are saying, we need to settle with the Russians. We need to reach an agreement. Ukraine needs to reach an agreement, and this needs to end now. And I think you're going to see some interesting things happening in the upcoming European parliamentary elections at the beginning of June. This is when 720 members of parliament are elected across the 27 member states, and they're sent to the European Parliament, and they decide policy across the EU. And for the most part, it actually looks, polls are saying that roughly 25% of the seats will be won by what are called far-right parties. And these parties have three things in common. They all want to reach an agreement with the Russians. They want to be friendly with the Russians. They're all against much of this climate and green technology, and they're all against immigration. So
in other words, they said enough is enough. I've seen that a lot of European countries, a lot of European things, for example, the electric cars. I think all of a sudden, Mercedes-Benz, that was very pro-electric cars, is backing down a little bit. All of a sudden, Volkswagen, who was 100% electric cars, is saying, well, we're not doing too well. Well, what do you hear on that?
That's absolutely true. And if you speak to many Europeans who have actually bought these vehicles, a lot of them are very unhappy. They're unhappy with the fact that the batteries don't last as long as they should. They're very costly to replace. And also, there's a very other large problem, and that is charging stations. The infrastructure is not there to support these things. So you end up buying a vehicle that costs a lot of money. And depending on the range, if you're lucky, you have a 380, 400-mile range, which means you really only have 200 miles within your house, because you don't know if you go beyond 200 miles if you're going to find a charging station to be able to charge your vehicle. So, yes, a lot of people have soured on that. A lot of people have soured on the whole immigration thing, and a lot of people have now also soured on the war.
Mario, immigration. That was the reason for Great Britain doing Brexit. Germany has destroyed themselves with immigration. France has destroyed themselves with immigration. I understand Switzerland has put their foot down last week.
Yeah, so Switzerland's far-right party, the SVP, has actually gathered enough signatures, and they did it in half of the time necessary, to put on the ballot a requirement that the country's population remain at 10 million or less between now and 2050. And the idea is that if for whatever reason immigration looks like it's going to increase above that, they have the right to actually trigger certain things which would not allow certain foreigners into the country. And I mean, I can read you a quote here from the gentleman that runs that, that's in charge of that party, the leader of that party. And he basically said, and this is translated, of course, from the German, that today too many foreigners are arriving and not the right ones. We need controlled immigration that benefits our country and our population. And this is the prevailing
Mario, we have 30 seconds. What do you want to tell the American people?
That the American people and the European people, I think, are aligned in a lot of their ways of thinking, and the European governments and the American government are aligned, and the American government with the American population and the European government with the European population are all diametrically opposed to each other. Basically,
thank
the governments are no longer representing the interests of the people.
Mario Conomu, thank you for the update, and we'll catch up with you again real soon. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Enjoy your day.
Thank you for listening to the Cats Roundtable. We'll be right back right after this break.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Welcome back to the Cats Roundtable. If you ever miss a segment or want to hear it again, go to WABCRadio.com, go to podcasts, go to minicasts, and play back your favorite segment.
With us today is Senator Marsha Blackburn of the great state of Tennessee. I've been telling the senator I was in Nashville with the Sinatra people on Saturday night, and Nashville is a great city and lots of fun. And Senator Blackburn, you got a great state.
We do indeed have a great state. Everybody is wanting to come to Tennessee, and we are growing. We do have a small state government. We have no state income tax. I led that fight and defeated that back in 2002. And the state has just experienced such good, positive growth. And you know something, John, people that move to Tennessee from these high tax states like New York, California, Illinois, they all say they have escaped from the high cost of living and the high cost of doing government. So I think this bodes well for us, and we look forward to having more people come our way.
Now, the problems of the world, would you like to start at the borders? Are things getting any better? And I don't know what kind of games is being played between the Democratic Party and this Mayorkas impeachment. I mean, obviously the man was not doing his job.
Well, he was not doing his job, and he lied to Congress and to the American people about the border. And we should move forward with this impeachment. He should be removed from office because of that. Look, we've had about 10 million people come across that border. Some we know who they are, and others we have no earthly idea who they are. We do know there are people from 170 different countries that came into the country last year. As I said, 10 million people on Joe Biden's watch. That is a population greater than the population of 38 of our states. Now, many of these people, thousands, as a matter of fact, are from countries of interest. These are countries who are adversaries of ours. And then you also have hundreds of known terrorists that have been apprehended at the border. But, John, you've got to look at the ones that we don't know who they are or where they're coming from. Now, this border issue and the open border, it is the number one issue as people are looking at candidates and looking at how they are going to vote, because that open border has turned every state into a border state and every town into a border town because of the impact of drugs. And people are seeing fentanyl deaths. Tennessee itself had 3,800 people die of fentanyl last year. And so we are watching very closely what is happening there. You know, I'm in every county in Tennessee, and what I hear from local law enforcement is they can't handle the issues that are brought to their community with drugs, with fentanyl, with human trafficking, with sex trafficking, with labor gangs, and with gangs like Trandiagua, the Venezuelan gang, or MS-13. They can't handle those until we secure the southern border. And securing that border is the most pressing issue that they talk to me about.
Now that Governor Abbott has the Texas border a little bit under control, the Biden administration is flying them in. I understand 33,000 have been flown in the last few months.
That's right. Here is what is happening. What Biden is doing is offering people in countries parolee status. Now, here's the thing that I would want you to know. When you're a parolee, you're granted parole into the country. You're given benefits and a work permit. This is why with the jobs numbers that have come out, they look at the number of jobs, and most of these jobs are being filled by what they're calling the immigrant community. Now, generally, parolee status and granting parole is something that is seldom used. President Trump paroled about 5,600 people a year. You also had President Obama. He paroled about the same number every year. But Joe Biden paroled 800,000 people in 2022 and 1.2 million people in 2023. So
wow.
This is something that they are doing. You know, the illegal alien that killed Lake and Riley had been granted parole, and he went to one sanctuary city, New York City, and he committed a crime there. They did not detain him because they're a sanctuary city. So then he goes to another sanctuary city, Athens, Georgia. And in both of these places, he was delivering food for DoorDash or Grubhub or one of those things. He had a theft charge in Athens. And what did they do? They let him go. And then he goes out and he kills Lake and Riley.
You know, some of these people, like, they open up, some of the countries open up their jails, open up their mental asylums, and they get rid of those people by sending them to us. And I can't understand how any Democrat no matter how left he is, he would accept that for the United States of America. I mean, don't they violate their oath when they do things like that?
Well, you certainly feel that they are violating their oath. Look, we are to protect the United States of America, and that is the oath that you take. And we should be paying close attention to what is happening here on our soil, in our country, and looking at this open border. They're breaking the law. These are people that are coming in between our ports of entry. And, John, we've got laws that determine who and how people can enter our country. And this is why, and the Border Patrol says, look, we've been telling you people for years, we need a physical barrier, we need better technology, and we need more officers and agents. And as I tell people, where do you think the phrase build the wall came from? Of course, Donald Trump turned it into a phrase that we all use, but it is the Border Patrol that told President Donald Trump, we need a border wall. He said, well, if you need it, let's build it. And that is something that they have used to be able to protect themselves. Now, in Texas, you were talking about Texas. I was in the Eagle Pass week before last to see what they are doing there to change what is happening around Eagle Pass and in that sector. And when I'd been there a year ago, they were being overrun by illegal aliens, thousands, every single day. And now they have about 12 a day. But what they did to make that difference was the Texas DPS took over Shelby Park there at that Eagle Pass crossing. And they put buoys in the river, they put shipping containers on the embankment, and behind that, they put razor wire and fencing. That is the way to do it. Texas is spending billions of dollars to secure their border. We know that this is something that is going to continue, that Texas is going to continue to secure their border. I have a piece of legislation called the Container Act that gives the ability to do that to these local communities and states and allows them to use state and local resources to secure the border when the federal government does not.
Senator Marsha Blackburn, I want to thank you for being with us. We all have to fight together to save our country. Thank you so much for what you do.
Thank you. Take care.
Thank you for listening to the Cats Roundtable. We'll be right back right after this break. Welcome back to the Cats Roundtable.
On Wisconsin, on Wisconsin.
This morning is Senator Ron Johnson, from the senior senator from Wisconsin. So many things are happening. Where do we begin? First of all, Secretary Mayorkas and the borders. Is anything improving at all, Senator Johnson?
No, the border is a clear and present danger. It's a catastrophe. But it's important to point out, John, it's a catastrophe because President Biden and his Democrat colleagues in Congress want an open border. I don't think the mainstream media is really picking up on that as they should. They cause this problem. I keep pointing out the fact that President Trump, even with reduced authority because of a number of court decisions, the Supreme Court ruled in 2018 that current law exudes deference to the president in terms of securing the border. So even with reduced authority, because of court orders, President Trump was able to secure the border. President Biden used that exact same authority to open it up. And, of course, he directed Secretary Mayorkas to really violate his oath of office, not faithfully execute the laws, and they opened up the border. And as a result, we have more than 6 million people have fled in this country. We don't know who these people are. 2 million gotaways. We certainly don't know who those folks are. Venezuela is opening up its jails, opening up its mental institutions. That's some of the people coming into this country. incredibly dangerous, and that's why the House impeached Secretary Mayorkas to highlight this to the American public. But now Senator Schumer wants to just snuff this whole issue out by tabling the Senate's constitutional responsibility to hold a trial on the impeachment.
Well, what's your opinion? Your opinion is it going to go forward or is he going to shove it?
Well, a number of us spoke to Speaker Johnson and convinced him not to deliver the articles of impeachment today at 5, which would have set up a process Thursday at 1 when senators are generally getting ready to go back to their districts or their states. And so he delayed it to next week, so we'll have some time to make points of order and that type of thing. But it sounds like Democrats are pretty dedicated to just holding a vote to table the impeachment and move on, because they don't want the American public to understand the catastrophe that is Biden and their open border policy.
Senator, the other thing that concerns me is President Biden is going around giving tens of thousands of students discounts on their student loans, which, you know, maybe there's some good in that, maybe there's some bad in that. But the Supreme Court said you can't do it. I mean, I just don't understand. And President Johnson, President Biden has said in person, he says, I don't care what the Supreme Court says. Where is the rule of law?
Yeah, well, John, this is a lawless administration. And, you know, President Biden is kind of picking up where President Obama left off. You know, for example, the Deferred Action on Childhood Arrivals, DACA. That was a lawless action by President Obama. This president's worse. You're right. Supreme Court ruled, for example, that you couldn't that the eviction moratorium was unconstitutional. He just went ahead and extended it anyway. They ruled that he doesn't have the authority to, you know, literally spend hundreds of billions of dollars by forgiving these loans to a small percentage of the American public. He doesn't have the constitutional authority. Even Nancy Pelosi, as Speaker, said he didn't have the constitutional authority. He's doing it anyway. So a completely lawless administration. I guess it's good if you're one of the small percentage of Americans that are having that debt forgiven. But if you're, you know, like the majority of Americans didn't go to college, or you paid off your student loans, or you didn't take them out, that debt burden is now being put on the back of your children, their grandchildren, your grandchildren. It's grotesquely unfair. Again, not popular with the vast majority of Americans, but I suppose pretty popular with those people whose votes he's trying to buy by forgiving their student loans. I think it's pretty grotesque.
Well, Senator, I asked two people in my office. I said, how much money do you owe on your student loan? One said $10,000, one said $20,000. I said, I guess you're going to vote Democratic. And for them, they're going to vote Democratic.
So again, it's a brazen vote buying scheme. And that's what it is. And, you know, Biden accuses Republicans of being a threat to democracy. I mean, you know, when you're buying votes with the public fisc, with money we don't have that further plunders and mortgages our future, I mean, to me, that's the threat to our democracy.
Let's go to the other side of the Atlantic Ocean. Ukraine. Are we winning or losing?
Well, it sounds like Russia is making some slow gains. You know, my concern has been that Biden never provided the type of support and weaponry to really put the kind of pressure on Putin to get to the negotiating table. I don't know what happened in Istanbul shortly after the start of the war, where it sounded like they were moving toward a peace agreement. And the Biden administration had Boris Johnson airmail in there and kind of blow up those negotiations. So, yeah, my point in Ukraine is that Russia will not lose this war. They have four times the population. They're actually growing their military industrial base. They're getting stronger. I mean, oil prices are up. Sanctions haven't worked against Russia. So I don't know how anybody thinks that Russia is going to lose this war. As much as we all sympathize with the courageous people of Ukraine, at some point in time, you have to recognize that reality and stop fueling the flames of a bloody stalemate. But unfortunately, we don't have policymakers, certainly not in the Biden administration, that are willing to recognize reality and act accordingly.
Agreed. On Israel, President Biden has insisted that Israel tone down the war and have some time off. And this time off, what's happening is Iran is re-energizing the Hamas and re-energizing, sending more weapons into Gaza. I mean, what the heck is going on?
Well, basically, President Biden is abandoning and betraying Israel. War is hell. That's why Hamas never should have broken the ceasefire with their horrific slaughter on October 7th. I don't know to what extent Israel has been hampered by President Biden and his administration's fecklessness, but war is hell. And the sooner you can get it over, the better. We had a conference call with the Prime Minister Netanyahu, and he talked about the great pains that Israel and their soldiers are going through. And by the way, at the sacrifices of Israeli soldier lives to not harm civilians. But it's the Palestinians, Hamas, that is hiding behind women and children. They are the ones that are putting civilians at risk. So, again, you have to recognize that reality and also recognize reality that Israel, it's not tenable for them to continue to live with Hamas on their border. They've got to destroy Hamas. And the Biden administration should allow them to do it, try and get this war over as quickly as possible so that what you're saying is happening now didn't start happening. So again, you give your enemies time to regroup, time to rearm. It's just going to make the final result even bloodier.
It's really, if the American people, I wish every one of them really realized what the heck is going on, because it's horrible. Anything else you want to tell the American people this Sunday morning?
Well, the reason the American people are not aware of the catastrophe on the border, Biden's betrayal of Israel, is because the mainstream media, by and large, is the communication wing of the Democrat Party, and they're not fully informing the American public. So it's up to people like you, conservative talk radio, a few conservative publications, to spread the word, and then it's up to Americans to get educated, understand the truth, and be evangelists of the truth. So, John, I just appreciate what you do day in and day out, trying to convey the truth, because that's the only thing that's going to save this country.
Well, thank you, Senator Johnson, for speaking out, and for Middle America. Middle America has common sense all the time, and thank you for speaking out, and we'll catch up with you again real soon.
Stay well.
The Cats Roundtable.
If you ever miss a segment or want to hear it again, go to WABCRadio.com, go to podcasts, go to minicast, and play back your favorite segment. Thank you for listening to the Cats Roundtable every Sunday morning. We'll bring you the latest in what's happening in our community, our country, and the world. Enjoy the rest of your weekend. Have a nice Sunday.